Hello, my name's Alvin Warren, and I'm the commanding officer of the Legion of Frontiersmen, Legion Cadet Corps Australia.
And what is the Legion Cadet Corps Australia?
The Legion Cadet Corps Australia is a youth community group which runs very similar to the ADF cadets, mixed a training curriculum of standard cadet corps training along with British traditional aspects of it. The actual cadet corps has been around now since 1987, but our history goes way back over 100 years.
How did it first start?
Well, in 1904, a person by the name of Roger Pocock was actually an ex-Driscoll scout from the Boer War, 1898-1902, and he originated from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And he ended up relocating into England, and along with, at that time, a person by the name of Major Driscoll, they formed the Legion of Frontiersmen, which they wanted to be sort of a territorial militia with their allegiance to the monarchy at the time. So in 1904, they formed the Legion of Frontiersmen in London, and they spent the next 10 years in normal training. And by World War One, they were a unit ready and raring to go. World War One broke out there in 1914. And as I try to explain to my cadets, if you look at some of the times, they vary between 11:40 and 11:51 p.m. on the 4th of August. But I don't know whether there's any real specific time. I sort of hover around that 10-minute period when England declared war back onto Germany. And the situation was that at that time, Roger Pocock was approaching the then King George V time and time again and saying that we're ready to go, we want to serve the country. And it was just another 10 months before there was an opening for them to do something with them. So in around about April 1915, the King actually again took a meeting with Roger Pocock, and Roger Pocock offered the full unit as a pre-trained BEF force to go to East Africa where they were needed. So there was a royal decree put down by King George and gave him the 25th Royal Frontiersman Fusilier title. And the Royal Fusiliers were made up of actually three different sections. There was the East African Mounted Rifles, the 25th Royal Frontiersman Fusiliers, and the Lancashire Regiment. So they dispatched him over to East Africa, which was all at that time a German province. And their job was to keep the supply routes open, the railway lines open through Mucktow and all those places. We have an Australian-born officer who was one of the first to receive the VC posthumously. And his name was William Wilbur Taylor Thomas Dartnell. It's a long name. He had served in South Africa with the South Africa Defence System in 1905, went over to England by 1912, took his family with him from Melbourne. He was born and bred Victorian, and he ended up joining the Frontiersmen and saw action with them, along with a few other Australians, in East Africa. There was a skirmish around Mucktow, and he was leading Section 2, and they were actually engaging German regular forces along with native contingent that the Germans had recruited. This native contingent was known not to take prisoners. What had happened was, because they were actually a mounted unit at that particular time, they had suffered about 70 to 100 casualties, and some of them couldn't be evacuated, and they stood their ground. So William actually was wounded in the leg. He was a lieutenant, and they were going to evacuate him with the other officers, but he said, no, I'm staying with the boys. So he formed a rear guard action while the rest of the unit were able to make way and retreat. But unfortunately, that rear guard action, no one survived. And he was hoping that he was going to be able to get some clemency from some German officers, but unfortunately it didn't happen. There is a bit of a story pertaining to his own stand, though, when he was fighting. And they do say there were somewhere between 8 to 10 enemy soldiers lying around him.
Went down fighting, didn't he?
He did. And he was awarded the Victoria Cross posthumously. And if you look into the history files and the War Memorial and the War Records there in Canberra, they actually say there was, in the Royal Fusiliers, which went on to fight right through to 1917 in East Africa, there was three Australians ordered VCs from that unit. So there was multiple Australians that were actually fighting in that British force. We regard William, because he comes straight from the 25th Royal Frontiersman Fusiliers, we honour him right up the top there. It became a situation where this actually, the Frontiersman is a worldwide regiment now, and it's actually got a sister battalion in Canada, which has been around probably 100 years, an air corps, Princess Patricia's Light Infantry. World War One was the only operation that the Frontiersmen fought as a unit. From there on, after World War One, they went back to England and were like a territorial militia again. And by the time World War Two had come about, the Frontiersmen sort of divided up and joined other British units. There is a bit of a story out there that when Belgium got invaded in 1914, that a Manchester unit of the Frontiersmen went over to Belgium 3 weeks before actual BEF forces. They paid for their own uniforms and rifles and went over to assist. It's often said that a Frontiersman was one of the first British soldiers to fire a shot at the enemy. I'm trying to really verify a lot of that stuff, but it sort of hangs around there and that story comes out all the time. And in Australia, the Frontiersmen were actually formed here in Glenelg, actually, in 1906. And it was around 1907 that they were actually recognised by the Department of Defence here and also in New Zealand, because they formed up in New Zealand roughly around the same time, that they could be used as some kind of structural force. They never deployed to World War One as a unit, but what is known, that quite a few Frontiersmen joined the 18th Light Horse Brigade and a few other Light Horse Brigades that actually departed for the Middle East. And it's known that if you look at the Frontiersman history, with British forces, Australian forces and New Zealand forces, around 1,500 Frontiersmen perished at Gallipoli. A while back I come across a new research site that comes directly from the United Kingdom, and it turns out it's the great-grandson of an original fusilier from the East African campaign in 1916. He's done a full war diary history on his great-grandfather's unit, which turns out to be the 25th Royal Frontiersman Fusiliers. He's put it up on the system, and you can get into it. It's a web page. It's got the whole history. You've got original photos. You've even got a photo taken about 2 hours before the Mucktail skirmish. They've received four battle honours during that campaign: Kilimanjaro, a place called Beho Beho, Nyangeo, and Bukoba. And that's all around that same East African area. It's all within about 300 miles of a central unit. And actually, we're given the proper titles of the battle honours from that. The East African Mounted Rifles were in Africa for a long time before World War One happened. And they were that proud to serve in the Royal Fusiliers that they're the ones who gave the Frontiersmen their battalion patch. And it's actually a rust-coloured brown with a light blue line through the centre of it, which denotes the African soil and the African sky. And there's a bit of history there. If you look through this new site, it's actually probably one of the best sites for research that I've seen, and I've been in this cadet corps over 20 years. And this particular young fella has spent 2.5 years, nearly 3 years researching it before he launched it. And it's actually a lot of file footage there. It's got the unit in column going through different places. It's coming into places like Nyangeo and Bukoba. It's got them, as I said, at just before the Mucktail skirmish. It's showing gun emplacements. It's showing them in action with machine gun emplacements. It's showing the marching with the horses as well. And it's actually got three honour rolls for those who didn't survive there. And it even shows the memorial that's actually erected to them in East Africa. You look at some of the photos that were taken towards the end of 1917, you can feel a bit sad about it, because when you look at the beginning of the history and then you see the original photos and then you see the depletion of the numbers by the time 1917 hits, it's a bit sad, really. You see all these soldiers that were sort of full of life and zest and ready to serve, and by the time it gets to 1917, around about November, December, they're a spent force. It's also, you feel quite proud to know that these people did that. And even though a lot of people would say, oh yeah, but it's a British force, but there were Australians in that. We look at that heritage and we sort of follow that heritage to teach our cadets that you got to know where you come from to know where you're going. And it's very important to us. Fortunately, we've been able to have a lot of knowledge come from my instructors. I've got quite a few instructors that are ex-Army, Navy and Air Force. I've got serving instructors in the police force still. I've got serving instructors who have been paramedics and firemen, and every one of them have been ex-servicemen of some type. My field ambulance section is run by a registered nurse. I've got a chaplain section, so we sort of sort it out. I've got a current serving reservist now. He's been in with us now about 6 years, but yeah, he's current serving reservist, and he often gets sort of busy with the Army Reserve, and then he comes back, gets back involved in it. But the kids love it. We recruit at nine years of age. From memory, the ADF start about 13. So we take them from 9, and we take them up to 17, and then if they want to stay on, they can come into the adult ranks as an instructor. We're all fully checked. We've always had what they used to call a VOAN number, which was done through police. The 1st of July this year, the new requirements for child safety come in through the Department of Human Services. And straight away, we were getting ourselves organised ready for that. So we've all been checked, that's all been cleared, and we're all okay with that. We make sure that everything we do is by the book.
So what sort of things do the cadets learn?
They learn parade and drill as part of their discipline. They wear the Australian OSCAM uniform because it's easy to get hold of. Even though it does look the same pattern as the regular forces, we wear our badges on the different shoulders. And we make sure that we explain that we are not ADF wherever we go, because I don't want to upset any ADF units. We get a pretty good acceptance by other ADF units. We try to show them that we do put in the core meaning of what it means to be part of the Australian Defence Force. And we actually promote that as a career. And we promote anything we can. So anything that comes in that we can promote as a fulfilling career for the kids' future, we put that out there. They actually do the traditional 303 drill as well. Those are our own deactivated 303s. And at the best of time, if probably some of the old diggers out there would realise that a 303's weigh around about 9 to 10 pounds at the best of time. So they're swinging those about. And the average age on that catafalque is around 13. They actually are very proud to do that.
Yeah, you could see that.
They get taught also, because we have replica Stiers that we use, which is the current issue of the Australian defence system, and they get taught to do that particular drill too. But even though it looks good, it's not as entertaining as the 303 drill.
Yes.
Because there's a heck of a lot more manoeuvres in a 303 drill. You can see they just love doing it. On a memorial, on a public event, it looks good as well.
Certainly did. They were a credit to you.
Well, they love doing it. And in actual fact, they bite at the bit. When they're turning 11 and 12, they bite at the bit waiting to get to the age where they can get on the rifle squad.
Oh, I bet
they
do.
They do. And not only that, we also carry our colours where we can. You would have seen our battalion colours flying in the breeze back where we were standing. They had the flag party there with the United Nations, the South Korean flag, the Australian flag, and then we had the MIA-KIA flag, and the less we forget. So it's something that they are proud to do, and wherever we can take them, they really get into it. It probably stems all the way back to when the original vigil in the city here was held. In 1999, the original commanding officer that put the Legion together back in 1987 was a person by the name of Jeff Crace, and he was an Air Force security police sergeant, and he'd been around forever in the Air Force, and he was running a cadet corps up in Darwin where he was stationed, and then when he got stripped down here, he started it down here in 1987 at Redwood Park, and he got to know Bill Denny and a few others in the RSL. And as you know, Bill Denny is a lieutenant colonel and very, very nice man, and was talking to him and got involved in that, and they come up with this idea of running a youth vigil. So Jeff actually authored and created that system in Kintore Avenue there each Anzac Eve. And that's been running since 2000. So we were the training corps, and I suppose, for want of a better word, the managing corps for 13 or 14 other youth groups for 12 years. We did it from 2000 to 2012. And then we thought, well, we were starting to expand in the suburbs. So we thought we might retire from that one and hand it over to another cadet corps. So we then moved out to the suburbs and have created one out in the suburbs. So the one we currently do is the Henley and Grange RSL vigil. Yeah, so it was a very proud moment for the unit and for Jeff to be able to put that together and be the creator and author, and then for the actual unit for all those years to be the training corps and be able to help other units sort of come through and make it such a success. The RSL was involved in it. The Adelaide City Council was involved with it. There was quite a few other areas that supported it. Even Villies supported it with food. And it's going strong, which is good to see. And it's good to see that you can put children back into a situation where they can see some history and they can actually start to think about what these kind of things cost, the human toll on them. As far as World War One and Two and all those other wars in between and after, you know, even up to the modern stuff now where we've got Afghanistan and Iraq, it's giving them a little bit of pride. It's giving them some idea that the Australian is still out there, not just to protect us, but to protect innocent lives elsewhere as well, which I've always been pretty clear. It's been a diggers' campaign to make sure they do that, and they're very proud to do it. So.
Now, you were telling me that you also take people with a disability.
Yes, we do. We take disabled children. Obviously, we have to have some conditions on that, but, I mean, we try to enhance it for them. We've had kids in wheelchairs. I don't say that sort of disrespecting them. I'm sort of just saying that we feel that if a child wants to be involved in a unit, they can't help their situation. They have no control over their situation. And if they're able to, we'll take them in. We take kids from all walks of life. I used to use the word co-ed, but I don't know whether that's politically correct anymore. You've got to just take all walks of life now,
That's right.
And those kids really, it's good to see them. Sometimes they have a little bit of a problem with their marching, but just teach them the best we can and accept what they can do, and they are proud to stand there.
What it must do for their self-esteem.
Well, we don't want to sort of hold back from anyone. If they've got the understanding to be able to take instruction and they can manoeuvre their, if they're in a wheelchair, they can manoeuvre their chair or whatever they can do that they're able to sort of understand what we need, we want to open that door for them.
For people out there whose children may want to join something, how would they join yours?
You can get us on the internet. The Legion Cadet Corps email is legioncadetsaustralia@gmail.com, and there are a couple of phone numbers that you can call with the camp commanders, and then we can make an appointment for them. They can come down and see us on a Friday night. We actually parade Friday nights, and we parade during the school term.
Whereabouts do you parade?
Well, we parade at Fort Glanville, which was generously given to us by the Department of Environment and Water Resources. They actually help us out down there. They're a government department. They let us meet down there on Friday nights. And our other parade camp is at Elizabeth Grove Primary School. Now, we have got a couple of others which are on recess at the moment because our kids have got older and we're trying to rebuild those, because as kids get older, they pursue other things when they get to about 17. And we are going to rebuild those, but they're just on standby at the moment. So it's probably better just to go there and get some information on what's there. The other one we've got is Golden Grove High. But that is one of them that's on recess. But if anybody can get a band of 8 kids together for me, I'll certainly get that going and operational straight away. We try to keep our costs down too. We've always had the ideal to keep our costs so that our family can afford it. And knowing the responsibilities of finance for families these days with mortgages and power bills and goodness knows what else is out there, we try to keep our costs down. Now, we haven't had a review of those for about 5 years. Everything is going up. It cost us this year, our insurance was nearly $4,300, so that went up by $300. And then we've got to pay for our hire facilities, and they're usually around the $450, $500 a mark. And then we've got to supply uniforms and administration costs and everything else we have. So we raise all our own funds. So we raise 100% of our own funds.
So how do you do that?
Well, we're very lucky that probably for about 7 or 8 years now, some of those funds we get through the People's Choice Community Lottery, and they help us out quite a bit. Other than that, it's raised through costs, fees that we get from our members. We might have the occasional fundraiser where we can hopefully get something out of, or we might apply for a grant and be lucky enough that we're chosen out of the hat. We've got a retired Child Sturt counsellor who's been part of our unit now going on 7 years. And he has been a great person to have in our corner. He's helped us out quite a bit. and the ex-mayor of Chichester, Kirsten Alexander, when she found us quite a few years ago, she, like a lot of people, was impressed by what she saw and sort of gave us a lot of support there. We do have other people around us. Member of Parliament, Mr. Tony Azapia, he's sort of been a bit of a patron for us for about the last 12 years. And we've got other people out there. We've got a retired police superintendent, Barry Presgrove. He's been with us for 20-odd years. We try to get out there and get ourselves known. We were lucky enough that when we started off the Henley and Grange Youth Vigil on the 24th of April, we were inviting local members from state and federal. And to date, we've been very successful. They've come along and supported us that way, along with other organisations like Red Cross and the National Servicemen's Association, Southeast Asia Association. So there's quite a few out there, and the list can go on, and they come along to these events too. We kick off our year with the National Servicemen's Day at Wallaroo, actually, and we've been doing that now 8 years. So we do a proper catafalque party on their memorial up there, and that kicks off our year for our public event. Then that sort of flows into Anzac. We do our own little ceremonies for D-Day and all that kind of thing down at Port. Then it flows into the one we've just done, the Southeast Asia one with the Korea Memorial. Then it goes on to the Remembrance Day. We try to do our best with our kids. We do have concession rates for people who are on concessions, and we try to keep our supply going the best we can. It does get hard to get uniforms sometimes. We're the same camo as the ADF. We don't want to upset them, but we figure that we're Australian. They do the same in New Zealand, because over in New Zealand, you have the Legion Frontiersmen New Zealand contingent, and they have a maritime section, a mounted section, and an infantry section, and they wear the standard New Zealand Army uniform with their own badges on it. There is a proper dress Legion uniform, which is dark blue, and it evolves from 1904 with the chainmail on the shoulders and all. But for us to do that here, that would cost the individual instructor about $3,000. We don't force that. We actually have got an actual 1904 uniform on display down at Fort Glanville. It's a very precious uniform.
People could go down and have a look at it on a Friday.
On a Friday night, come and see what we do. We parade at 7 p.m. and we go through till 9:30. We ask our kids to get there around about 6:45 so they can get themselves finally ready for the start of the evening parade. And then they go into a training and they get a session of where they do their initial parade, where they salute the flag and they present. And then we go inside and we have a 5-minute welfare check for them. And they can speak out, and if there's anything worrying them, they can let us know. And if they want to talk about it, they can talk about it in open forum, or they can come to us later and talk to us. And we don't do one-on-one. We normally have two instructors with any individual cadet. And if the parents want to be there, they can. We have a chaperone support staff as well, which are parents of some of the cadets. So they help us out with extra duties, like taking the fees and that kind of thing, and sorting out drinks for them later. And
I didn't know that this existed.
Unfortunately, it becomes a situation that to advertise costs money, and our priorities are to outfit and pay bills, and our bills are our rent and our insurance, and we outfit with aftermarket, what we call scam copies, because you can't buy them direct from the ADF anyway, they won't allow it. And we get supplies from places like Aussie Disposals and other online stores where we get the camouflage uniform. And we issue two sets of camouflage uniform. One we call their bush set, which is the one they parade in on a Friday night. And when they go away, they wear that. And the other one is what we call their parade set, which is the new set. And when they're in public events, they wear their parade uniform. And they get issued with a slouch hat and a bucket cap. And they also, holding in my hand here, a blue beret, which is traditional infantry blue for British forces. They've got to earn that one, though. That one doesn't just get issued. They've got to earn that one by researching the battalion and the Legion history. They get 3 weeks to research that. They put their hand up and say they're ready for their beret. They want to earn their beret. And we don't force it. We ask them. We don't want to put pressure on a kid that's already studying at school and that kind of thing. But 9 times out of 10, they want it yesterday. We normally say to them, okay, you've got 3 weeks to research. We give them all the research material. And then they have a 10-question written exam they've got to do. And we go easy on them. It's multiple choice. It evolves around the Legion history, the cadet history. It evolves around current serving instructors, and we ask them a few questions on that. They've got to get an 8 out of 10 average, but out of that eight, there's two compulsory questions that are marked compulsory they must get right to get their beret. And if they can achieve that, they get their beret. We have two summer camps a year. One's at the beginning of the year, usually around about February down at Fort Glanville. And then we have an end of year summer camp, which is around about late November. But we have three winter camps through the year that we have out at Truro. And it's the Truro Flats Airfield. It's a private airfield, but the guys out there are really good. And we get to use their hall as a bivouac, divided in two sections, one for the males and one for the girls. We'd like to get some more. So if any young ladies are interested in coming along, and the girls get into it just as much as the boys do, and it's good to see.
And so they learn the same things.
They learn
the boys?
Same. It's exactly the same curriculum for anyone. We don't change anything. So if they want to get muddy and dirty, and they want to get out in the bush and get camo on them and camo paint and go out on patrol and do camouflage and concealment and orienteering, and they're open to do the catafalque party as well. I'm always looking for somebody who would put their hand up and say, look, we can go and buy you some uniform if you like. If there was a company out there who would be interested in coming along and having a look at what we do, it would be great to get some support that way. And we always put those companies on our website. If we could get some extra help, that'd be great. Some of the organisations like Southeast Asia and the Career Association have given us donations over the last few years for the vigil and that kind of thing. We're very glad to say that we were presented with a check, so a bit of a donation for us, and every little bit that comes along we spend.
Being a cadet with your group, that would allow them to go into the Defence Force?
Yes, what happens is we teach them the basics, and as any person would know, once they sort of get old enough to go up to a recruitment officer, whether at Army, Navy or Air Force, and they tell them they've had some experience in cadets, they tick that off on their list and say they've had it, and it all sort of helps. I will give a reference for them as the commanding officer, and my instructors will give references to the camp commanders. Whether it's going for an ADF job or going for any job or even going for a part-time job, they want to work at McDonald's, we give them a reference. We have a zero tolerance of bullying and or anything like that, so no criminal activity. You take an oath to the country and you take an oath to do the right thing by Australia's laws. So we do the same as any other cadet corps, and when you become a cadet, it's a way of life. So we explain to the cadet that once you join us, that this evolves into a way of life. So even at home, if you've been out of control at home, we're expected for you to change your ways and do the right thing by your mum and dad or your guardian, and also at school. But we do expect a level of application and responsibility. So we give them some responsibility out there, and we're proud to say that a number of our cadets that I've known over the last 20-odd years, quite a number have gone to the Army, Navy and Air Force. We've had a couple go through Duntroon. We've had some go to Federal Police. We've had some go to State Police. And we've had them go to the Metropolitan Fire Service, and we've had them go to the Ambulance Service. Others have become doctors. We're proud to know that these kids, maybe we've given a bit of guidance somewhere. We want to be able to let them know that they are safe, their self-worth, and that they are valuable, because our young people are our most valuable commodity.
They are. I don't think they get to know that too often.
They don't. And unfortunately, even, I suppose, if we talk about the modernisation of population, it gets lost in the crowd at times.
It does.
So when they come to us, we want them to feel like that they are worthwhile and that they can have some self-confidence and they don't have to be concerned about it, that they're part of a team. So that's what we try to sort of instill. Yes, we're trying to get out there. I mean, if anyone else would like to, or any other local government would like to talk to us about getting something organised for a youth vigil, if they've got a memorial, they want to do an Anzac Dawn service on and they want a youth vigil run into it, we're always open to ideas.
How would they contact you personally?
The Legion email. That's the Legion Cadets Australia @gmail.com. Or if they've got events that they would like to see a cadet corps at, any outfit out there that can do something for the youth of today and get them outside, get them in the sun, get them into some fresh air, because this day and age of electronics, it's just everyone's a couch potato or sitting at a desk. And I've said to my wife, I can see human evolution now, and in 200 years, everybody's thumbs are going to be the size of their fist.
Yes.
So You know, so
oh, very good.
So I just want to get them out in the sunshine and get them outside in the fresh air and show there's a lot more than just sitting behind a computer and playing games. Give them some positive outlook in life. If they're coming from a struggling environment, we want to be able to give them some support so that they know they're worth something, not just a number standing out there and not being noticed. We want them to know that you're important. You're important to us. You're important as an Australian. You're important as a citizen of the world. You don't need to feel that no one cares, because we do.
Brigadier Warren, I'm so glad you could come in and talk to us.
Thank you for letting me be here. It's actually been great, and I've had a good time myself. Thank you again.
Thank you.